How's your car looking? Showing its age? Faded paint? Dents? Dings? Don't worry. Maaco is here to help. They're the experts in affordable paint jobs and light collision repairs, helping you keep your car looking its best without breaking the bank. With Maaco's national reach and community focus, you're not just getting top-notch service. You're actually getting a partner you can trust. Visit your local Maaco today and see how they can refresh your ride. Go in, get the free estimate, and the expert technicians will handle the rest. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free. And things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country. And there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and across the board from me this evening, Mr. Tim Dennis. Good evening, Tim.
Hey.
We are going to be talking about some different topics tonight. We're going to talk about voodoo in the first hour, and then we have our good friend...
Lingerie in the second hour.
That's right. No. Bill Burns is going to join us in the second hour to talk about UFOs and the second season of UFO Hunters on History Channel. It's been a really good show. I've enjoyed that quite a bit. Have you had a chance to watch much of that, Tim?
Why do you must put me on the spot? Very awkward right now.
It's really a good show. You know, they tried to do a UFO Hunters on the Sci-Fi Channel. I think it failed so miserably because they just knocked off the Ghost Hunter show, full format and everything. It was just crap. And I don't mean that badly. The episode was good itself, but I just mean the way they presented it by knocking off and just making it a clone of Ghost Hunters.
The only thing they were missing was the EVP reference.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep. It was just not a well-thought-out plan for the show. If they would have stepped away, I think they would have done much better. And the other show is doing really well. They've got a great cast and have covered some really great topics, and we're going to be covering more with that in the second hour. Before we get too deep into the show, though, talking about UFOs and voodoo, I want to take a quick moment to mention the Moss Beach Distillery episode of Ghost Hunters.
Yeah, right.
Because everybody keeps lodging at me, shooting shots. They want me to weigh in like I have anything that's of any import to say about the whole Moss Beach Distillery deal. But I guess there's a silly little made-up war going on online. People are trying to pit Lloyd Auerbach against Taps and taking, I think, what Lloyd Auerbach said out of context about the whole Moss Beach Distillery episode. And, you know, what I think is funny is that there are so many people out there. The whole idea of this field, and, you know, we've got in studio, I don't want to forget to mention, we've got a special guest host that's going to be here with us this evening, psychic sensitive from the TV show Dead Famous. Mr. Chris Fleming is going to be in studio talking to us in a few moments. And we'll throw the mic over to him, too, for Moss Beach Distillery, because he's had a chance to be a part of that. I'm kind of surprised by the fact that there's such a hubbub about this. You know, the whole idea of the paranormal field is that we're supposed to be exploring different aspects of the paranormal, discussing what's going on, opening up for different sides of view. And to me, that's really important because that's the only way we're going to get anywhere in this field is by talking about the different sides. Lloyd Auerbach posted a very long, lengthy blog about the episode of the Ghost Hunters where they went to Moss Beach Distillery. And I guess the big thing about the episode was that it appeared on the show that they did not inform Jason and Grant or the team about the tricks with the mirrors and the moving tables and the moving chandeliers. And Lloyd's main point was, well, if you're a professional ghost hunter and your career is going out and debunking these things, just doing a preliminary investigation, which most of us do before we go to a site, is you should know the background. And he was saying that, you know, he's personally written in two or three books, there's been case files that he's done on the Moss Beach Distillery. And in one of the books, it's almost the entire thing is about the Moss Beach Distillery. And he was just referring to it, not trying to sell his books, but showing how easy it was to get reference material for this. Is Chris's mic open, Tim? And Chris, you did a blog on this as well on MySpace. Yeah. And again, why we're even putting much time and effort into this, I don't know. But I thought we'd just say our piece and then be done with it and move on. With the whole Moss Beach distillery deal, you've been out there.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Taps has been out there. Everybody's investigated the place. I guess the big complaint now is that, well, if it was really haunted, they shouldn't have all these little things going on. And I had to laugh because, like I said, the Haunted Mansion ride at Disney is well known to be haunted, I guess, by three workers that died during it.
Well, Queen Mary, too. Queen Mary's got a lot of stuff.
Now, just because it's also got an attraction around it, does that make it any less haunted?
No.
Does that discredit is it the Blue Lady?
Yeah, Blue Lady.
Right. Does that discredit it because they have all these other things going on? No, it's a business first and foremost.
Of course.
Their idea is to draw people in. So if you get to see this stuff and then the Blue Lady makes also an appearance, that's just icing on the cake. But the rest is more for ambiance.
Yeah, just it's for fun. When people come in there, have a good time, entertain them. But still, there are paranormal things that go on.
It's like going to medieval times, right?
Exactly.
They're dressed up like knights or they're giving you a show for what's going on there. You know, everybody wants me to pick sides. Who are you going to come down on? Listen. Lloyd Auerbach is one of the best in the field out there. He has some definite ideas on the paranormal, how to investigate the paranormal, and what to do in investigations. Do I agree with everything Lloyd has to say? No, but that's the beauty of this field. He can do it his way. I can do it my way. Taps can do it their way. Chris can do it his way. And maybe if we pull all of our facts together at the end, that's where we're going to find some information. Because if we are approaching it from different angles, right, and we're coming up with the same answer at the end, then there's something more to it.
Yeah.
I don't think Jay and Grant quickly discounted the entire thing as just a sham. They were just frustrated to spend so much time having to find out about all the crap, and they do try to keep themselves out of the loop a little bit so that they're not going in with a preconceived notion.
Right, but it made a good episode, though, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It was entertaining to watch because for once it wasn't just the same formula. And like I said, you know, you're getting in their fourth, fifth season. You got to mix it up and show different style episodes. There are episodes that will not air of Ghost Hunters
right,
because things didn't go well in the investigation. Nothing happened. It was bland. This one happened to be something different. And I give kudos to the guys for putting on a show that's different and showing a different aspect.
Well, they had to, Dave. I mean, look at all the seasons that they've done so far and they have coming up. Is they had to do something different. And when's the last time you saw such a huge debunking? And it really wasn't a debunking. It was just showing here are some of the, you know, attractions they have at Moss Beach. You know, I went there, investigated with Lloyd Auerbach a few years ago, and we had some very interesting things happen. But all those type of artifacts that they had, you know, for the clients that come in there to have fun, were pointed out to us.
Right.
You know, so when I watch the show and I see they weren't exactly pointed out to Jason and Grant, there's two possibilities. One was the production didn't tell them, okay, because they want to make it interesting to see if Jason and Grant do it, or it could have just been edited out. Who knows? But who cares? It was an entertaining show. It is TV. Lloyd has done so much for this field, and Jason and Grant have done so much for this field. I think people are just getting one side of the picture there and don't realize the full history of this place, and I think that's what needs to be understood, and just let's move on.
Yeah, exactly. There's nothing more to beat on this dead horse. You know, it is what it is. Oh, well, Tap should have done this, Tap should have done that. Well, you know what? It's a TV show. They had a half an hour. They put on the entertaining parts of the show instead of going in. You know what? People have to let go of the fact that, you know, from the beginning of this show, all I've read about is people bitching and whining online about how they make Taps makes the rest of the field look like frauds because they don't do it this way. They don't do it that way. If we sat there in a real investigation and showed all of the back work and the history and this and that, it'd bore the hell out of everybody watching. Ghost Hunters wouldn't have made it past two episodes.
You're right.
The fact is we got to keep it fast-paced, energetic. When there's nothing going on, you make a story about Brian pissing people off. When that doesn't take anymore, you talk about Steve being afraid to fly. It's just filler when there's no good paranormal activity. Well, this sucks. They get paranormal activity on every episode. Well, when they don't get paranormal activity, you bitch and moan that they're talking to Brian or they're dealing with this. Well, there's an aspect to this field. It's not just about ghost hunting. It's about the dynamic of a team, how people work and don't work well together. And I think watching that show has been a very good overview of what most paranormal groups appear to me to be. There's a lot of cohesion at first and then a lot of dissension that happens in just about every group I know. Even the group that you belong in Chicago, there's been little changes
we've
here
had
and
problems.
There.
And some of it's to blame for me and other people. It's just when you're with people, everybody has a different way of investigating and approach. And if you can't do as a team effort, there are people who are going to fall to the wayside. You know, not everybody's going to agree on everything.
Right, I agree. Yeah, you just got to do what you got to do. Do the best you can do. Try to work it all together. You know, again, I give kudos to the guys. It was an entertaining show.
I loved it.
You got to stop watching these shows, too, looking for the end-all, be-all. These are TV shows about entertainment.
And even Jason Grant say they are not the greatest investigators right. in the world.
Right.
You know, they're just fortunate they had an opportunity to do a show, and it's influenced a lot of people. Let's look at it that way. Right. It's influenced a lot of people to get off their butts, get out there and start investigating and take an interest. If it wasn't for Ghost Hunters and some of these other shows, but namely Ghost Hunters, people would not be out there doing it, would not be going to these events, would not be getting involved in the paranormal. So kudos right. to them.
There wouldn't be Dead Famouses and Haunting Evidences.
Well, we were
before
them, so, but
right. But I mean, there's, I'm just saying all yeah. these different style
exactly.
shows that are out, they wouldn't be getting this kind of attention.
You're absolutely
you know,
right.
This is a mainstream show. So I, you know, congratulations them. Hey, Lloyd, great job stepping up, showing a different view and telling and challenging people, because I think that's how we're going to get better. If you just accept things on blind faith alone, you are not going to progress this field. We've got to come together. You've got to challenge things. He did it respectfully, I think. He was just showing his point. You don't have to agree with his point, but the fact of the matter is he had a point to make, and he's allowed to say it. And just because it goes against the plumbing gods and it didn't coincide exactly with their thought doesn't mean it's wrong.
Plus, that man's been there so many times right. and investigated.
Exactly. So, I have nothing negative to say about either one of the groups.
Right.
You know, they're good people. Lloyd Auerbach is one of the guys people should be leaning on more in the field to understand and get a feel for the paranormal. The guys, Jay and Grant, are doing fantastic. So, you know, much luck with them and congratulations as well. Now we're going to get started. I want to get into the show here for our guest. Tim, you're giving me a dirty look. Did we need to go to break? No? Okay, we're good to go. We're going to be talking about voodoo, Haitian voodoo, Chris. I don't know how much you
That's
know
awesome.
About that voodoo that you do so well, but our guest is Kanaz Filan, and he is going to talk to us right now. He has one book out called Haitian Voodoo Handbook that came out in 2006. His new book is called Voodoo Love Magic, also Wild Horses, Historic and Contemporary Accounts of Trance Possession. And you've co-written that with Raven Caldera, is that correct?
That is correct, Raven Caldera.
Okay. Well, we're getting a strange echo. Okay. All right. With the book that you have out right now, let's go back and talk a little bit. Give me some background for people that are just tuning in and are not real familiar. I mean, most of us, let's face it, we learned what we learned about voodoo from watching I Dream of Jeannie and the James Bond movies, right?
Well, yes, that's correct. how are we doing on the sound?
Hey, we're doing fine now. Are you getting a problem there?
Okay, no. I was just checking.
Okay.
Voodoo, like our images of contemporary voodoo that we have, largely originated during the 1920s. The U.S. Marines occupied the island of Haiti from 1915 to 1934. So a lot of our imagery of Haitian voodoo comes from that time. Unfortunately, most of it ran in the pulp magazines. It tended to be along the lines of I Walked with a Zombie, My Cannibal
right.
Cousin. It was essentially the basic theme of most of these being, you see, black people are inherently savage. You put them on an island by themselves. You give them control of things, and they revert to idol worship. We did not really start getting any kind of anthropological study of voodoo until about Kurlander did some work in the 30s. Maya Deren's work in the 50s with Divine Horseman was one of the first books, and then later on, we're starting to understand that what voodoo is actually at the beginning of a world religion. It's a religion which developed combining Roman Catholicism, French mystical Christianity, Freemasonry, Hermetic magic, and at like the root of it, of course, being African traditional religions, which were brought to the islands with the slaves, largely from the Fon and Ewe tribes. There's also some Yoruba and Congo stuff. It's a melange of different religions that has become like its own very unique, very Haitian thing. You know, I would say very North American thing. Western Hemisphere American thing.
Right. Now, with the mixture of these religions, though, how much of it, I mean, I'm sure just like every kind of religion, there's a dark side to it. How much of voodoo is actually a dark mystic art, as opposed to, from my understanding, most of voodoo is about healing and helping and making a better, it's about intention, right? Than it is more about the, you know, stabbing a doll to give your enemy a headache.
Ah, okay, well, several things there. The stabbing your doll to give your enemy a headache, there is a tradition of using dolls in magic in that fashion. They're called poppets. You usually will see that in Europe and England. That is not really how you do things. Voodoo, what you're calling voodoo dolls, you don't see in Haitian voodoo. I think that came in. Those voodoo dolls are Hollywood. They're really not much with Haitian voodoo. You are correct that voodoo, as it's practiced in Haiti, is largely about healing. It's largely about community worship. It's honoring of the ancestors, honoring of the land, you know, honoring of honor la maison, honor la family, you know, honor your house and honor your family. It is about a large bit of herbalism is put into it, herbal healing. I mean, absolutely. The thing with the dark stuff is that was the stuff that was more appealing in the pulp magazines at the time.
Made a better story. So when you're dealing with the things like the stabbing of the dolls, from my understanding, maybe you can clarify this for me, that's meant more as a place to focus the intent of healing. If somebody has problems with their head, the needles are injected into the head of the doll to focus the intention, or into the heart, or into the chakras on the doll to clear them and make them feel better. Is that more along the lines of what an actual voodoo doll is for?
An actual voodoo doll, you don't really use dolls all that much in Haiti at all, largely because there aren't really that many dolls available. You also have to understand just how poor Haiti is at the present time. The average income is $300 a year. It's probably, I'd say, one of the poor, like, Nigeria's annual income is like 10 to 15 times the annual income in Haiti. It's really poor. You don't really have voodoo dolls. You don't have the equipment there to make dolls. What you do for healing is you tend to use herbs for baths. There's a whole tradition of herbalism. You will go to the spirits, and you call on the spirits to heal the person. It's voodoo because the herbalism thing largely replaces traditional medicine, because medicine, other than occasional missionary work and some stuff from the Cubans, who incidentally do a great deal of work, missionary charity work in Haiti, the Cubans and the Cuban government, other than that, you are not really going to find a doctor. If you find a doctor, it's going to be on a cash basis. If you don't have cash, you don't get medical help.
Hmm. Kanaz, what about, you were talking earlier about the pulp books that came out in the entertainment industry, of course, using the voodoo doll to entertain in movies. What about zombies? The truth going back to voodoo, using zombies and bringing the dead back to life.
Zombies. This is an interesting question. There's an excellent book by somebody who's studied zombies. It is Wade Davis's book, Serpent in the Rainbow, was actually very good. He had worked with an Ungan who I've corresponded with named Ungan Max Beauvoir. He had studied some of the toxins which they use. There is a tradition of people who are basically given this medication, this drug. Some of the ingredients are puffer tetrodotoxin, which is a neurotoxin. There's a large amount of scopolamine, Datura, which, you know, of course, is a very, very powerful deliriant. And these people afterwards are become essentially slaves, and they're kind of shambling around. Davis saw some examples of that in rural Haiti. The term zombie can also be used for a dead spirit, which you make a pact with and you use to do magic with. They're kept in what's called zombie bottles. I've seen those. Those are fairly common commonly used in voodoo. I do not have one in my house. My mother who taught me voodoo has a zombie bottle. My initiatory father has several of them.
Is this still practiced today?
Yes. Oh, yes. I was initiated in 2003. I was initiated in Brooklyn, New York. There is an enormous voodoo community in New York City. There's an enormous voodoo community in Miami, Florida. There's an enormous community in Montreal, Canada, and also in Boston. Anywhere where there's a large Haitian population or a Haitian American population, there is voodoo. There is, of course, also a voodoo community in New Orleans.
What would you say the percentage is used for good versus evil with this type of ritual?
Gets into what are defining good and evil here. You know,
right.
Somebody, keep in mind that Haiti also doesn't really have a law enforcement system. What police they have tend to use their badge and their gun to make money from the people who they terrorize. They're really, you don't, if something happens, you know, somebody murdered my brother, you know, there is no law enforcement. I went to my family's jab, the person, you know, I went to my family's ancestors, the guy who murdered my brother dropped dead. Now, was that an evil act or was that bringing justice? You know, it, from the perspective of the person who's avenging their brother, that's a perfectly legitimate thing. You know, what's more, it would be a perfectly legitimate thing if, like, he killed my brother, so his sister dropped dead. It's very much about, like, you protect yourself, you protect your family. Given how limited the resources are, it really can't be any other way. You know, it's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You don't get into the idea of wanting to feed the world until you make sure that you've had a meal and that your loved ones have had a meal.
Gotcha.
And so what is good is based on what is good for me and what is good for my family.
Mm-hmm. What is the difference between voodoo magic and witchcraft?
Voodoo magic, or as it would be called voodoo wanga, would be magic as it is practiced by people who are, you know, practicing Haitian folk religion / mm-hmm. magic. Witchcraft is typically used to describe European cultural practices, for example, like also practices that were influenced by Wicca, the religion which popularized by Gerald Gardner in the 1950s is, you know, of course, one of the largest, most popular and growing religions around today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're both valid religious traditions. They're both, you know, useful insofar as you can follow them, and if you're a reasonable, like, you know, and get good results from them. But they are quite different. There are a lot of preconceptions that people will come to. A lot of people, for example, who are learning witchcraft have come to me from a Wiccan or a pagan background where they're studying a lot. They've studied a lot of stuff from modern occultism, and they're thinking, well, then all of these ideas also exist in voodoo. You know, well, you can't kill somebody. Well, no, there's really no prescription against that. There's a basic idea. You need to be careful with your spirits. You don't want to. A spirit which can kill your enemy is a spirit that can kill you. You keep that in mind when you, like, make a deal with a spirit to go kill your enemy.
Right, so once you unleash the genie, you have no control of it once it's out.
Once you unleash the genie, yeah, you may be dealing with this genie for some time to come, and it may start demanding other sacrifices. That, generally, people don't do what they call working with the left hand that much, because there's more danger attached to it. There are greater consequences. You know, you have a moral code which is much more utilitarian than based on big thou shalt not. For example, the great thing in Wicca is the threefold law. You don't want to harm anybody because it'll come back on you threefold. Well, that does not really exist within Haitian voodoo at all. The basic idea is you want to harm somebody if they harm you. You may even want to harm somebody before they harm you. There's no idea that you cannot control the will of another. You shouldn't do love magic on a specific person. That's bad. A lot of people who are into modern European witchcraft will say that. You don't really have that prescription within voodoo. You don't even also really have it within hoodoo, within most forms of folk magic, in fact.
Well, then why do you think there's been so much interest in these love potions and putting spells on people to fall in love with one another?
You know, that's a great question, Chris. Let's hold on to that. We're going to take a quick break here, Kanaz. If you can stay with us, we'll be right back. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show with our guest, Kanaz Phelan, and our special co-host in the office and in the studio with us this evening, Mr. Chris Fleming.
It will keep you on the edge of your seat.
I must have drank me about 15 Dr. Peppers.
I got to pay.
Just don't get any on the floor. Hurry back. There is more to come from the Darkness on the Edge of Town. You hear footsteps and things bumping and banging in the middle of the night. Could it be paranormal activity? Or is it just Dave and Tim raiding your fridge?
Beer.
Strange things happen in the darkness on the edge of town.
Hey, welcome back to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Again, make sure to check our events page, darknessevents.com. We're going to be going out to Waverly Hills Sanitarium here at the end of July, July 27th through the 30th, with guest hosts Chris Fleming, Patrick Burns, John Zaffis, Adam Bly. We also have Chip Coffee from Psychic Kids and the new show, or in Paranormal State, I should say. We've got Michael and Marty Perry, the amazing mediums are going to be out there. Going to be a great time. Also, Mark and Debbie Constantino, the EVP specialist. So I hope that you'll join us out there when we go back to Waverly Hills Sanitarium. Again, it's at darknessevents.com. We have many different packages you can choose from. We're going to get back into tonight's guest. Our guest is Kanaz Filan, and he is the author of a new book coming out, forthcoming book called Voodoo Love Magic and Wild Horses, Historic and Contemporary Accounts of Transpossession. Now, let's talk a little bit. Before we went to break, Kanaz, we were talking, Chris had asked you about love potions, and I know that's kind of what your next book is going to cover, Voodoo Love Magic. Discuss that. Discuss the theory with us in the practice of love magic according to the Haitian tradition.
Well, as we were going to break, I remember somebody had said, you know, well, why? What's with the sudden interest in love magic? And that's pretty much been what... It's sort of like if the internet is for porn, magic is for love.
Right.
It's sort of like since the dawn of time, pretty much, if people went to a magician, it was normally to get a love spell. I mean, one of my other gigs besides being a writer is I work as a reader, and if as a tarot reader, and I pretty much could say if I do 10 readings in a night, I could say to all 10 of them, you're concerned with your, like, you have love concerns. And at least 8, probably 9 of them would be like, well, yes, of course. I mean, it's just the nature of love. I think people want love. People aren't satisfied with their love lives. People feel like, you know, there should be something more. And that's why people go for, what did they say? Like, people want to put the magic in their love life.
Right.
And I think that's one of the reasons. And people come to voodoo. We have certain advantages, I think, as a tradition. For one thing, we are a very sensory tradition. We're very much about getting all of the senses involved. And, you know, of course, that's important for love. We are a tradition that's open and accepting of different things. Haitian culture in general, for one thing, is very open to homosexuality, to transgendered people. There's very much, like, voodoo is known, in fact, to have a disproportionately large number of gay people. It's also, you'll find in the Puerto Rican community, there's a lot of gay and lesbian people get involved in espiritismo. It's very much open to all sorts of different ideas of relationships, to... We understand love comes in all different packages, and, you know, you'll love who you will. And more importantly, people come to voodoo magic because voodoo has a reputation for getting results. People who want love magic are very much in a place where, you know, I desperately want this person in my life. I desperately want this person to come back in my life, or even I desperately want this person to get out and stay out from my life.
So, Kanaz, can you hook me up with Jessica Biel?
Jessica Biel. That
is it hard to be that specific when you're asking for these love potions? Is it just to find love in general, or can I say I want my neighbor's wife? I mean, that specific.
If you want your neighbor's wife, first thing I would do if you came to me and you said, I'm in love with my neighbor's wife, I'd sit down with you and I'd say, okay, let's do a reading here. I'm going to do a tarot reading, basic divination. We are going to call on the spirits and we're going to see, you know, we're going to do a standard divination. Look at what the situation is and, all right, what are the obstacles? I mean, well, the obvious obstacle is she's married. I mean, are we talking she is happily married? You know, are you already seeing this woman on the side and you'd like her to be your full-time lover and ditch the husband? Are there kids involved? Have you thought about this? You know, do you really want to go through with this? Do you understand that, like, a partner that will cheat on their spouse is a partner that will cheat on their spouse? If I can get your partner, this person, with you, and you break her up with her husband, and there's no guarantee she's not going to dump you for somebody else later, if you understand all these things, and, you know, it's like I get a look at the cards and I get the feeling my spirits are saying, yes, you know, we will help this person, then we go from there.
So you have to look at the effects.
Make sure that you realistically understand the consequences of this. If you really believe in love magic, and presumably you've just paid me enough money to come in for a consultation fee, you believe in it, then you have to understand, well, if you think I'm really going to do this, I might be able to get you this person. I can't guarantee you I can get you the storybook ending you've gotten in a romance novel, but if you're willing to take the responsibility of the magic, we can do that.
Well, that begets the question, you know, I mean, so many people have heard the story. It's like the monkey's paw story, right? You get your wish, but with every wish there comes a curse. Do you get this love if the love isn't going to happen on its own? Is there a certain trade-off, Kanaz, that if I want Jessica Biel to love me and you make it happen with magic, am I going to lose something else in my life? You know, my dignity, my hair, something along those lines. It might, you know what I mean? Is there a swap out?
I mean, I couldn't tell you what's going to happen with your dignity or your hair if you've got Jessica Biel. Maybe that would be the best thing that ever happened to you, and you'd live happily ever after, and, you know, you'd swear up and down that, like, I was the greatest Ungan of all time. I'd get on Oprah. I'd wind up, you know, becoming the next Dr. Phil. We'd all be happy.
Hey, a month would be okay.
Maybe we should talk after the show.
No doubt.
But, I mean, seriously, what would happen? Well, you know, in, like, what do you give off? Is there a trade-off? Well, is there a trade-off in any love affair you get yourself in? I mean, you give up your swinging bachelor lifestyle, if nothing else, when you basically commit to that partner. You know, if you've committed to, like, you know, if, let's say, you've got an open relationship, you're polyamorous, you've got, like, three wives, two husbands, and, you know, this huge extended family. Well, now you've got responsibilities to all six of those people. Is there a trade-off in magic? Well, is there a trade-off in life? I mean, magic is like life, and in both of them, the laws of thermodynamics apply.
Right, but is there a more negative connotation to doing something like this? You know, we hear that a lot of times the stories in history is that you start mucking with love and the backlash can be devastating.
What I would do is I would look at the cards. You know, is there, as in my case, I would read the cards. Like some people would come in, have a spirit come in through transpossession. And what does the spirit say? And is there always a big trade-off like that? No. Is there sometimes? Yes. I mean, is anything going to involve, like, taking responsibility for the magic, including the possible consequences? Definitely. You know, there is always a certain amount of risk with magic because, like, anything, like, if magic is energy and magic is real, then, you know, magic is going to have as much potential danger as electricity, as gravity, as anything else.
Well, Kanaz, could people come to you as a, you know, like a wedding counselor or a marriage counselor? You know, Chris and his fiance Bambi, you know, they want to enrich their love. Can they come to you and get potions that they can both swig to solidify their love for one another and make it stronger? Or say they've been married 25 years and the luster is off the penny. Is there something they can do to re-fall in love?
Oh, I absolutely. As a matter of fact, you know, that's more like, I would get more clients like that who would want stuff like that than I do people who are like, you know, can you break this marriage up so I get a new partner?
So you do get more, you said, clients like that?
I get a lot of people like that when I'm doing readings. You know, like, yeah, you know, me and my wife, we've been together a while. You know, sometimes we feel like we've gotten in a rut. And then it's like, you know, for example, I might call on the spirit Gede, who is one of the spirits of voodoo. He's the spirit of the dead in the cemetery. I don't know if you as a paranormal investigator have ever run into the horny, drunken, loud dead. That's basically what the Gede are.
I run paranormal events. I run into those once a month.
I date them.
Oh, okay. Well,
I have a hard time sleeping.
That is quite in keeping with their role in Haitian voodoo. They show up all the time. I'd imagine I would be very surprised, in fact, if you're regularly holding paranormal events and seances and you don't occasionally get a spirit come in who appears kind of drunk and has an extremely foul mouth.
Yeah, I call that my ex-mother-in-law.
Your ex-mother-in-law.
Kanaz, so you think that, I mean, people that become very obsessive and they're really in love with somebody and they're pursuing, you know, months, weeks, years of their life to pursue somebody and want that person to fall in love with them, but yet the spiritual destiny is for them not to be with that person, they could be affecting their own karma and kind of messing up their entire life path.
Okay, well, you're assuming here that there is such a thing as spiritual destiny and that there is such a thing as karma in the Western theosophical standard sense of the word. I mean, karma in the sense of for every action, there's an opposite reaction. Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, obviously there is that. Spiritual destiny, you know, is there a spiritual destiny we must fulfill, or do we make our own spiritual destiny? That's, you know, I mean, that's one of the great questions of philosophy. You know, should you, like, you know, what I would generally say if somebody comes to me who's obviously very obsessed with a person, you know, you came to me, you're really obsessed with Jessica Biel, and, you know, frankly, I start getting the point that maybe your obsession with Jessica Biel could get to camping out outside her mansion and then, like, maybe going further than that.
No,
the first thing I'm honestly going to do is say, you need to get what we call a white bath. We're going to go into some healing stuff, which is designed to cool you down and give you some peace of mind, maybe get the emotions a little bit in check, and then we go from there to decide, okay, do you really want Jessica Biel, or is there something else that you want? Jessica has become this very safe, unattainable goal for you that's allowing you to obsess about her and not think about the fact that you're really concerned with these other things in your life you don't want to deal with. And, you know, in that, like, I fulfill a role that a lot of Ungan and Mambo fulfill in Haiti. It's the therapist.
It's a good point.
Can you do this? I'm just curious, Kanaz. If I'm looking, you know, so many of these people are so desperate for love, so desperate for that connection. Is there, you know, we need licenses to drive. We need a license to hold a gun, you know, to be able to shoot a gun. We need a license to fish in most of the states now. Do you believe that people should go through some kind of healing process for themselves and their soul before they try to get involved in love and forward that part of their life and relationships?
Let's put it this way. I'd say most people could stand to get involved in a healing process or two before just about anything. I mean, I don't think there's ever anything bad about doing some healing stuff. Voodoo, like, one of the things I would do that a lot of people would do in voodoo is, like, start each morning with a prayer. Voodoo, it tends to be Catholic prayers because, like, Haitian culture, because of the Catholic thing. You know, start every morning with, I thank the higher power who answers to many names. You can call the higher power by whatever you wish. I thank you for the blessings I've received, and, like, I ask you for the strength for the trials I endure, and, you know, just say a few prayers and spend a few minutes every morning getting yourself right and, like, cleansing yourself spiritually before you go about your day. And I think that would work wonders for a lot of people. That simple 5 minutes alone would change lives for, you know, almost for 90% of America, I think, who doesn't take that time.
You know, Kanaz, you seem to be very knowledgeable all this stuff, and, you know, earlier Dave pointed out you also have wealth of knowledge dealing with transpossession. You know, as a medium myself, I've always been fascinated with what I call walk-ins, certain possessions, and channeling, which I've been able to do myself. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and your knowledge on that subject?
I had started working with transpossession in voodoo. Like, after I'd written the books on voodoo, I was like, okay, the big thing about voodoo that interests people, of course, is the transpossession. The fact that people will lose consciousness for periods of time. Something else appears to come into their body, takes over, performs healing, does certain actions, and then leaves. That I had begun studying. I then began talking with my friend Raven Caldera, who's also has written many books on what he calls Northern Tradition Shamanism, which is shamanic practices from pre-Christian European era. And he had been working with Transpossession. There were other people that were. So as I began doing the book, I was afraid at first that I'd have a hard time doing a book on Transpossession around the world because, well, okay, I know it exists in Africa. I know it exists among African-derived traditions. Where else does it happen? And, of course, I ran into, as you said, being a medium, the American spiritualism. I discovered that, oh, once upon a time, there were millions of people that were going to seances and that spiritualism was probably bigger than Methodism in the United States. People don't know that today. I discovered, you know, there were accounts of Transpossession in the Iliad and the Odyssey. We discovered that there had been accounts of it happening in pre-Christian Europe. There were accounts of, early Christians. There was a whole group called the Montanists, where you saw, which involved people who were getting possessed by the Holy Spirit in Jesus. There was the cult of Cabal, where people would get possessed. And pretty soon it became like it was harder to find places where possession wasn't happening than to find places where it was.
We have to take we have to take a quick break here. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more. We'll go into this. I'd like to talk to you a little bit more about that. And also, is there belief in the Haitian mysticism of voodoo and all this in demonic possessions? I'd like to know more about that, and we'll cover that when we come back. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Director's log. I can't believe I'm with these Darkness Radio dorks again. It's like having bamboo shoved underneath my fingernails. Please, somebody shoot me.
Don't you dare move. There's more to come from The Darkness on the Edge of Town with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis. The smell of voodoo hangs in the air. Either that or Dave and Tim had the seven bean salad for dinner.
Don't nobody go in the bathroom for about 35, 45 minutes. Somebody open the window.
Welcome back to The Darkness. Or whatever is hanging in the air on the edge of town.
And welcome back to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Across the board from me, as always, my faithful and loving companion. Wow, that sounded very strange. Yes. Hi-o, Silver. Tim Dennis, and also in the studio with us live tonight is our special guest host, Mr. Christopher Fleming.
Good evening,
Chris. Now, before we went to break, and as we were talking a little bit about different forms of possession like that, does the Haitian religion believe in demonic-style possessions as well?
You absolutely. If by demonic you mean involuntary and harmful possession. A great deal of voodoo, while people tend to fixate on voodoo curses, 90% of voodoo is self-defense. It's more like cleaning up areas, using prayers and stuff to rid yourself of negative spirits. In the case of somebody who was, for example, blacking out, experiencing fugues, engaging in a lot of what you would call the classic symptoms of demonic possession, the thrashing, screaming obscenities, for example, I might use Catholic holy symbols and prayers. I might give them baths. There are certain herbs which are known to be very purifying or cleansing. Basil is used quite frequently. So is spearmint, or you can use baths of that along with holy water, water you've procured in the Catholic Church, things like that to rid people of spirits. One of the reasons, the person might also have a ceremony called a lave-tête, a ceremonial head washing, and you might recommend that person have an initiation, what we would call a kanzo ceremony, where they would become an Ungan or a Mambo. Because one of the thoughts being that somebody who was liable to those kinds of possessions would also be able to work as a vessel for the Loa, would be able to have what we would call like a possession during a fete, during a ceremony where the spirit would come down into them. So what we would try to do is to rid them of that negative spirit. We would simultaneously try to concentrate on using that tendency towards possession as a positive thing.
Yeah, that would be my concern is with opening up. I mean, we have a lot of people now that seem to be wanting to get more into the transmediumship part of things, you know, both in the paranormal field, now through voodoo, I'm sure. How protected can you make yourself against that once you open yourself up? I understand you were talking about ways to kind of bless, but I mean, once you've opened yourself, does it become easier for other things to attach themselves to you to show themselves?
Well, there's a few things you can do, like taking, like in what we do in voodoo, you know, is you establish a good relationship with the Loa who walk with you. I mean, the spirits whom you serve and who serve you, and they protect you. In spiritualism, they used to call it getting a fetch or a guardian spirit. You make contact with a spirit which is benevolent and which serves as a protector and as a guide. That's one of the things you can. That's one of the things you can do to help yourself. You can do a lot of cleansings of your area. You can keeping your house clean actually can help you against demonic stuff. Demons tend to demons are. You know, just negative entities in general tend to prefer squalor and filth as opposed to cleanliness and order. You can also use certain herbs. Holy symbols are very good. I mean, anything that will run from a cross, that will run from a high, that will run, you know, from a hand of Fatima, anything that finds those things uncomfortable is probably something you don't want in your head or in your general vicinity. I mean, as you've said, there is, though, the problem of people are opening their heads up to just anything. You have to take these precautions. I mean, I am rather concerned. A lot of people are going to try to start careers as do-it-yourself horses or do-it-yourself trance mediums and get themselves into a great deal of trouble. But the best you can do is warn them. You know, these are real entities you're talking to. Not everything you encounter in the spirit world will have your best interest at heart. You can tell people that. You can hope that people follow that message. And, you know, if they don't, you hope they learn from their mistakes and don't make them again in the future.
With voodoo, and if there's love magic and things like that, is there magic for wealth, for long life, for health, for, you know, every different aspect as well? Or is that something that once you start getting into the greed points of wealth and things, that it's just that's not...
The next book I'm working on, actually, one of the manuscripts is entitled Voodoo Money Magic. It's the sequel to Voodoo Love Magic, because the other thing that people traditionally go to the witch for is to make their crops grow better, to make my business prosper. Absolutely, there are many things you can do for wealth. I mean, one of the ideas in voodoo is it's rather a holistic thing. There's an idea that if you are serving your spirits well, and you're keeping them in an appropriate style, they will look after you, they will provide you with money, and they will provide you with reasonably good health, and they will protect you from, you know, harm and bring you prosperity. It's expected that you will get material benefit from serving them. You know, that exchange is considered part of the contract.
Well, how do you know the spirits that you have, and how do you keep them happy? I mean, I guess if that's the important thing.
Okay. In voodoo, you would know the way because you would consult somebody who was a professional, somebody who'd been working with the spirits for some time.
Can you tell, with what you do in the field, can you tell... how do I put this? Can you tell if somebody has the stink eye on them, if they've got bad juju, if there's something negative attached to these people? Can you tell that with your abilities and the openness to voodoo? Can you tell when there's negativity there?
Absolutely. I mean, I can tell when there's negativity on people. A lot of times, like what I will prescribe is the white bath. That would be, it's a bath, you put, it's holy water, some condensed milk, a little bit white flower petals, and a little bit of perfume. You just keep that to a cool temperature, room temperature, maybe even like just a little bit below it, and you pour that over your head while you're saying prayers. You then go to sleep, preferably in white sheets and wearing white clothing. That will help you calm and cool yourself. There are other herbs you can get. There are things you can do. You know, yes, I can definitely sense when people have bad stuff on them. A lot of people do without realizing it. I mean, I
Well, how about me, Kanaz? Can you sense that over the phone? Is that something you can tell? Do we have? Can you say, "Oh yeah, Dave, you got a bat of the, you got the batch of stink on you," or you've got, you know, no, you're surrounded in light. What can you tell me?
What I could tell you, well, first of all, I mean, right now you and I we're engaging in a conversation. I'm sort of talking to you
sure.
over the phone. It's if I were actually doing what I would do in that case, if I really wanted to find that out, would be I would light a candle, I would, you know, say a basic prayer, I would do a reading, and I would ask the spirits, you know, does Dave have something on him? That I would kind of, I would go with them. If I were around you in person, I mean, there might be stuff about you where, like, the hackles would rise on the back of my neck, and I'd be like, oh, you know, there's something wrong there.
All right, well, that, yeah, I guess that's what I was curious about, is if you have that, can you see it sticking to somebody? When it's there, is it a lot more visible for you in person?
Yes, I found that was one of the benefits I got after the Lave Tet ceremony in 1999 and after my initiation in 2003.
Well, Kanaz, the night has flown by for us here. I appreciate you spending time. Are there websites people can check out and get more information on you?
Well, there's my website, www.kanazfilin.com. Which, you know, there's my book, The Haitian Voodoo Handbook, which is available. Where other websites, there's ezilikonen.com, ezilikonen.com. That is run by Hector Salva, who is a good friend of mine. He has also gone working in Philadelphia. And there's, you know, you can drop me an email. I am at kenazfilan, K-E-N-A-Z-F-I-L-A-N, @gmail.com. And, you know, I may be able to answer your questions. And if you're looking for somebody in your area who does voodoo, I may or may not be able to put you in touch with somebody in your general locale.
Well, Kanaz, thank you very much for spending time. It was great talking to you. We've had, this is very interesting. I hope people will pick up your books again. You're the author of Haitian Voodoo Handbook and also the new forthcoming book, Voodoo, Love, Magic, and Wild Horses, Historic and Contemporary Accounts of Transpossession. For more information, check out Kanaz's website at kenazfilan.com. Stay tuned. We're going to be back with more at the top of the hour. Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We'll be back with Bill Burns, publisher of UFO Magazine and star of the History Channel's UFO Hunters. We'll be back with more and more Chris Fleming right after this.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.